Okay, well, it's February 10th, and we're talking with Brent Adams, who's downtown, wandering on through or marching on. How is it? Things going downtown, Brent?
It is really hopping down here.
Really?
Fact. Yeah. Well, what, exciting.
Are you in Pacific Avenue or?
Yeah. I'm right in front of the Rittenhouse in Palomar.
Uh huh. And are you? Warming center is closed tonight. Are you headed for a safe place to sleep? What are you up to?
I work at a desk at Cruise.io organizing different programs. I'm the program manager for Warming Center program. But we're starting a, maybe you remember, the Connect the Dots, connecting the dots. At the we're doing a survey of people who sleep downtown, a 30-question survey. And then we're also organizing a new storage program. It's going to be transportable on a box truck. Tonight I sleep at my home. I won't disclose where that is. We gave away dozens of blankets and coats and 100 hand warmers and socks and all kinds of stuff out in the Harvey West area on Coral Street. Really, where those people seemingly have been abandoned by all entities out there.
Well, I noticed you posted what looked like a report from a police report on people being given tickets out by the tracks. Any update on that?
No, I wish I had gotten a call about the cleaning in progress. I keep going out there, and there's these signs. That's what I posted earlier. They keep posting signs that they're going to be doing the cleanup in a couple of days, and then they don't show up. So the people out there were really confused. Also, you have a confluence of Caltrans, of course, along Highway 1, and then the city, I guess, who is now managing the areas of the railroad tracks, which I don't understand how anyone could get a trespassing ticket for being on a railroad. That's completely out of, I don't understand that jurisdictional stuff, but they ended up confiscating a lot of belongings and citing people, of course. So basically, I think if an officer shows up and runs somebody's ID and they have a warrant, that's kind of out of our conversation, really. That's more to the point of a person's behaviors. Of course, some of these warrants are bullshit, but when they go up to an encampment and the person's not there and they take the entire contents of the stuff and put it in a truck to be disposed of, that's more what we tend to care about. They did a lot of that. A lot of people lost their stuff. There's a little video of a guy in a wheelchair. I think his name is George or Walter or something. He was trying to get his stuff together. He told them he would be right back. He has limited mobility in a wheelchair, clearly. Came back, and his blankets were gone, and his bin of clothing was gone. So that's just one little cross-section of extreme hardship for that person. But those people out there, they don't have a managed encampment like San Lorenzo Park. They're really just sleeping on the sidewalk along Coral Street, along the tracks, along Highway 1. And, yeah, there's some addiction and mental health challenges. They are people who live in our community, and many of them are from Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm. You may have noticed in the Sentinel, maybe not, last 2 days, Jessica York has been busy writing articles about San Lorenzo Campground and the so-called Boneyard and the plans to open it up soon and disperse the campground. There's an item on the City Council agenda on Tuesday which talks about setting a date to disperse the campground in San Lorenzo Park. What's your reaction to that? Any thoughts on that stuff?
Yeah, you know me. I have conflicting thoughts. On one hand, our official, as a nonprofit, we state that we support it. We want it to be successful. We would like them to follow their, the things that they say as working with all city partners, including Warming Center program. I believe we are the closest nonprofit to the street on a daily basis and are really working night and day, bringing warmth and possibilities to people. But for me personally, since I'm not a nonprofit, I'm a human being with feelings. I do feel like I've been completely disregarded. All the research around the transitional encampments of the West Coast over the last 10 years that we've done been completely disregarded and not even not followed city completely lacks savvy in their assertion to move towards a, like what they're doing. Let's be real clear. Already they said they've hired Chris Monteith, who's been fired numerous times for his behavior. I think he's a good person. He likely will be just fine. Contracting with Streets team, creating a series of hosts at $17 an hour. That's pretty cool, but that is far and away from a sanctuary type encampment where you create an environment where people are empowered to be active in their own, the functioning of their own community. Hosts, management, assistant management in a space like this. This is an open air shelter, then it is definitely not a community, no matter what. But it'll be fascinating to look, to watch. I will not be negative. I will not be snarky.
I'll be negative and snarky.
Let's stand by, because if it benefits a bunch of people, no matter how much fucking money they're throwing down the drain, then it benefits people.
Let me ask you this. It was a little unclear to me whether this is going to be a leave during the daytime encampment. That wasn't made clear by the staff report that I looked over. Do you have any clue about that?
We only know that they've stated in the past that people are not going to be free to leave at will. They'll have to leave with the shuttle program, and that is mainly to protect the neighborhood. On one hand, I understand why they would do that. On the other hand, it's not the type of neighborhood that requires that. It is so close to areas where people are free to come and go. We're talking Pocono railroad tracks, Harvey West, Coral Street, homeless services encampment. It's ludicrous to make it a lockdown camp. On the other hand, if you want to try to keep it a clean and sober camp and you don't want anybody from the outside neighborhood to come, that's a good policy. We've seen that done successfully in other areas where you don't want a dealer to be able to come near the space, even enter the space, which taints the ability for people who are trying to experiment with sobriety. I think people are able to leave on the shuttle, and then let's take the city's highest assertion that they're going to put people in contact with all available services. They want to help people who want to get kick drugs to be clean and get into jobs programs, mental health, anything that's possible in this entire county that's available for a person who sleeps outside should be brought to bear for this encampment. And that's why I think it's pretty good. I just hate that it's going to be for a very limited number of people. Our programs are meant to raise the floor of experience for every single person who sleeps outside. Mm-hmm. Not for a paltry individual.
When you've described, when we talked about the camp, the tents in San Lorenzo Park, and how privacy is really an important aspect of things, one gets the impression that this is not going to be respected in this particular camp. In fact, people will probably be required to sign away their privacy if they walk in. And moreover, it's going to be a no drugs camp, probably a no grass camp, is my guess.
I have no idea either. Likely no drugs. You're probably going to have the belongings searched at least upon entry. I don't know. I hope that's not the case. Things like that, like a security guard in your community, and the searching of your belongings upon entering your home, your domicile. Things like that communicate exactly the opposite of what you need to see and feel if you're going to have interpersonal, progression.
Sure, I mean, that's true. And the question I would have, and I guess, if you read Jessica York's story, I ran into her actually when she, right before she hit the camp, she was there with her photographer, Dan Coiro, whatever his name is.
Yeah, I watched them head out.
Yeah, my suggestion was, is anybody going to come to this barbed wire encampment? Or, I mean, some people probably will. But the notion that it's going to be attractive under these circumstances for folks, in the utter depths of despair, I don't know. Some people still prefer to maintain their dignity rather than surrender it.
No, I know. I would actually say this gives an opportunity for a new type of dignity. What you and I deal with on the street on a regular basis is the lowest common denominator experience of homelessness. It's what society has driven people to. And yet we call that, to some extent, freedom and autonomy of movement. But if somebody has an opportunity to be in a space where they know that likely their stuff isn't going to be stolen, they can have a full 8 hours of sleep, they know where they're going to be for the next 3 months, and the city wants to help them, that's what the city is saying. Mm-hmm. We want to help you. We want you in this space. That's a brand new thing.
Have you talked to folks at the, well, either on the street or at the tracks or at the San Lorenzo campground and gotten some sense? You said, you know, you're doing this survey for your own,
The survey is not, I'm not doing the survey because we're trying to do the cleanest survey possible. So I will not be surveying anybody because I know the people and they know me. I'm sending people out who have no knowledge of the individual.
Right. Well, actually, I want to know more about that survey when it happens.
So to answer your question is, it depends on who you're talking to, when you're talking to them. Often we're talking to people with the dual diagnosis situation. If you're talking to somebody who is a methamphetamine or heroin addict and you ask them at the wrong point of the day if they would go into such a camp, and they would say no, but another part of the day they would say, hell yeah. I believe that many people will not want to be in that space for many reasons. A lot of other people have been waiting for something like this. Anything, any opportunity to get out of the madness, Robert. We are all trapped in a madness situation where there's nothing offered, and this is a huge offering.
So
it's a bummer that I'm not involved because I think I could really help.
Brent, in the last week, if you looked at the number of people you've talked to in the last 2 weeks. I mean, this proposal has been around for several months.
I've asked at least 2 dozen people in the last 2 weeks.
What's your finding of how many? What percentage of those folks say they're eager or at least willing to go to this place?
It's half and half.
About half and half.
I mean, if you go into the San Lorenzo encampment, that's already a messed up sample because a lot of those people are there because their access and ability to acquire and use.
I understand. I understand. But I'm including, the entire sample of people that you happen to run into even as you're walking through downtown, that sort of thing.
The Santa Cruz doorway types, I bet you'll see half of the people being interested. The question is, and this is what you and I should be asking most, Robert, the city is already invested in the homeless, downtown streets team at $400,000. Of course, they've raised a lot of money on the side, as all nonprofits do. People just send them checks and checks and checks. Not Warming Center, though. Barely get that sort of thing. But my point is, the city's already highly invested in this program, and they're going to be hiring these people. So the question I have is, are these people also going to be taking up a lot of the bed space at this encampment? Is this a space for primarily streets team members to have a place to sleep and then also to earn a wage, which seems to me a bit redundant, that they're going to double down again and provide people that they've already invested $400,000 in for the year, and now they're going to pay them a $17 wage while the program may not be showing success at housing and employing them by the basis of its program initially. Does that make sense? So the downtown team is saying we're housing people through the dignity of work. Well, who's gotten a job, an actual job, and who's actually got housing? So if the city now opens up this encampment and says, okay, everybody in the streets team gets a place to live now, we have to start adding things up. How much has the city invested in the streets team, and to what end?
So the streets team currently, are these largely unhoused folks? Or are they?
Yes, we document that mostly. They do hop this hopscotch over people who sleep outside who really need shelter. People in the streets team need shelter far less than many of the people in wheelchairs that we're staying downtown.
Mm-hmm. And do we know? Do we have any sense? I saw no mention in the city council report that this would have provisions for disability folks.
That would make it quite a different thing. It's really impossible. It's not impossible. It's very difficult to drag a wheelchair across the large gauge rocks that they have at the Boneyard, let's call it. I don't want to call it the Boneyard. It's just so ludicrous, but at this
Well, maybe truth in advertising. How about the barbed wire yard? How's that?
Yeah, you know, the barbed wire is fine with me because it's essentially a water department corp yard, and that's what the barbed wire is for. The barbed wire is not meant to be for people and the experience of people being in there, so it's just kind of inconsequential. You know, they didn't put the barbed wire there for the people to stay in. They put it there to be able to lock items in there and have them protected.
But it's not
a good visual, as we say.
No, it's not. There's also rent control coming up on the agenda. Have you heard much talk among folks outside about that? Of course, they've got no rent to control because they got no place they can rent.
Well, tomorrow's the big shindig, I understand, where they're going to start they're going to have a party. I guess it's at Resource Center for Nonviolence.
Yeah, it starts at 2:30 for those who want to go. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the deal there. Thanks for reminding me about Tuesday City Council, because I do want to, I have requested 5 minutes to speak to that issue. We're talking about specifically the 1220 River Street encampment.
That's item 24 on the City Council agenda, if you're interested.
Thank you. I've already requested 20 minutes, and David Tarazas was, anyway, I have to be really careful. It's been a difficult week for me because watching this all play out, Chris Monteith being hired, hosts being hired out of the quote-unquote hosts being hired out of the speech team, and I've already have a weird relationship with that because of my lack of ability to have the city's contract with the storage program. We're moving powerfully forward as a nonprofit, though. We've got, our board is supporting a lot of things that I'm working on, and both of the new projects are going good. We hired a new site manager, our third one in Watsonville, because we just keep losing them out there.
Why is that?
Because it's the nature of part-time work. It's the nature of professional part-time work. I needed somebody who can really do the job, who's bilingual and knows the community, can run a program, has a good background, but they're only getting a certain, a limited amount of money per week, basically on call. I pay them a stipend to be on standby, and they're expected to increase the volunteer email list, do some street outreach, and keep everything, all shined and ready to go. Like it's kind of like the fire department, when the forecast hits, they have to, do the whole pop-up procedure. What I find is the first one, I won't name their names, lied to me outright and didn't do any of the work that the person had said they had been doing. And then the next one ended up gaining additional work and started going to school, to the point where it made it impossible, if we were to open up, that they would be able to do the thing at all. So they were just kind of stacking, diversifying their income. The new person has more time, strong community roots with Community Action Board, Brown Berets, and the community of Watsonville at large. And the person feels really good, is also instructing me in different parts of the Watsonville community. It seems good, at least for the next 2 months.
Now, we were talking about so far, the Warming Center has only been open 3 nights this winter, right?
We're talking about Watsonville.
And how many nights in Watsonville has it been open?
4 nights.
Uh-huh. And yet you've also said in the last time we've talked that you were prepared, had the weather been compliant or gotten worse, to open up how many times over the season?
Well, we focus on 20. We're a 20-night program, and so we try to gauge. And that means as a backup to the winter shelter. So the winter shelter is open the 180 nights or whatever it is, and we know that on the peak nights they hit their maximum occupancy and people are forced out. So realizing that there is no backup plan within the county, we decided to build one for Santa Cruz and then now Watsonville. And so gauging the last 10 years of forecasts is really difficult because there's no memory online or in any other service of historical temperatures except for the Watsonville Airport, the only one that retains that data. So when we're trying to find the 10-year data, in Watsonville it's 3 to 4 degrees colder than Santa Cruz. So we set it at first 38 degrees, and we realized we made a grave mistake 4 years ago. We dropped to 32, then to 34, now to 35. Now, because of this very mild winter, and last year we were opened, we could have been open 30 or 40 nights based on the amount of difficult to forecast rain last year. This year, we had some cold nights, but the forecasts in Santa Cruz still have not broken 40 degrees not once this year yet, not this entire winter season. That is astounding. So this is a strikingly mild winter, and yet actual temperatures have broken 40 degrees. So that's when we realized we were in some trouble in terms of what people are experiencing. We spent a lot of time on the street distributing hot packs and gloves and all warm clothing. We constantly answer our phone, and we go to wherever people need us for practically whatever they need us for.
I do notice, Brent, that you call back when you're called or you answer your phone.
That's a countywide hotline. So.
Unlike the Homeless Persons Legal Assistance Project, which hasn't been doing much of that recently.
Well, wait. That program doesn't actually exist.
Mr. Plaich claims it does, so I'm...
when was the last time you saw Mr. Plaich in court fighting for someone's legal rights?
I can't remember there, Brent.
It never happened. we're not talking about that. But it's true that the warming center is not adequate as a winter shelter. It's not meant to be. But yet we're held to that standard by most people in the community.
I'm not holding you to that standard.
Let me just finish by saying we increased our temperature in downtown Santa Cruz by up to 38 degrees.
I remember, and you've said that before. I guess what I wanted to, what I said last time we spoke on the phone was that, you can quickly cram 17 open nights into the next few weeks because you've got all that left over. But I'm assuming that isn't a possibility for you, even if you wanted to.
That's not the intention. We're still based on a threshold. It's not just like, we've got, only a certain number of nights left in the winter. Let's open every single night. It'll be, you're right. We anticipate opening many more, but it is look at the temperature tonight. It looks like a summer night downtown right now. Here's Dwayne walking in shorts, living the dream. I saw a bikini top today.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, who controls this? Could you unilaterally say, okay, we're opening the shelter for the next 17 nights?
I make the determination, and I'm empowered by a board now more than ever. I get board votes, but the way our bylaws are enacted, that we can get a decision made and quickly online, which is what we did with raising it from 35 to 38. That's a full 3 degrees. That's a lot. When you look at past 10-year weather data, that's a huge increase, especially the higher you get. Exponentially increases the number of nights. If I were to open on any given night, I could. I would be able to do that.
Have you been tempted on some? How much lead time do you need reasonably to be able to get your staff available to open on a particular night?
48 hours.
So you need at least 2 days to do it.
Yeah, that's one reason is because we deal with churches, and if you've ever tried to contact the office of a church and have them contact you back, that can take a 24 hours, sometimes 48 hours alone, just to get the church on the line. We do have some personal phone access to them, but they don't always answer it. Sometimes they wait until, a lot of these churches don't open on Mondays because that's their day off after Sunday, their day of praise. And so we don't get them until Tuesday. So imagine if we had a forecast Saturday night that we have to be open on Monday, we could really have difficulty finding a church space, and we have.
How many churches would you say, I understand that there are several hundred churches in Santa Cruz North County. I'm not sure if that's accurate. You still there?
Yeah, I lost you there for a second.
I've noticed that a relatively very small number of churches actually either open their doors or even their parking lots to homeless use, even for a limited time.
Yeah.
Has that been your experience as well or not?
Oh, yeah. Unbelievably difficult to get. For the warming center, AFC has been pretty good. The winter shelter has been increasing, and then the newly named, Community Faith Shelter, which used to be called the Interfaith Satellite Shelter, they've been pretty good at adding, and they really like to stay, self-congratulatory within their own in camp. But so we are not a religious program, so the fact that we would bring, several dozen people who sleep outside into a church, and we're not faith-based, so I'm going to name them really quickly, the three churches: Quaker Meeting House, Peace United Church, and Calvary Episcopal. These are the hero churches in our community that have opened up to the Warming Center. In many ways, they've supported us and continue to support us. Even when we don't open up, we get clothing. They call us anytime they discover people in need. We have a really good partnership. They volunteer. They're engaged in a lot of the other work that we do. Pretty great churches. I think there's like 44 churches within Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are, there's a lot to be said about distinctions between, I think, the two different types of churches, ecclesiastical and fundamental or something like that.
Mm.
We find that the fundamental churches are not very, the Christ-based churches are not very Christ-like, you find.
Mm. I've often found, ironically, that it's fundamentalists, well, sometimes Quakers too, of course, but it's fundamentalists, some fundamentalists who've actually stood up against law enforcement authorities when they try to arrest people for sleeping in the church. This happened in Southern California in Buena Park with Reverend Wiley Drake years ago. And Calvary Episcopal, of course, is not a fundamentalist church, as far as I know, but I'm not much of a doctrinal guy. Brent, I think I'm going to give you a chance to sum up if you want to. I was actually going to ask you if you had any... I've been reading about mishaps in San Francisco around dumpster diving, people being nearly compacted in dumpsters, and that happened around in Santa Cruz some years ago where there was that near fatality. Have you found anything more about restrictions of spaces in the downtown area for poor people? This is my beat. I know it's not something you may be entirely comfortable talking about, but I still ask you anyway. I noticed that the they've driven away musicians who aren't necessarily homeless, who can be travelers, from the parking lot area of the Trader Joe's area, and that in the past they've threatened to arrest ACLU petitioners there just for being there with a petition. Although I found recently, a couple days ago, petitioner said he'd been there for a week and he hadn't had any trouble. What's been your general experience in terms of the downtown scene, or have you been experiencing anything down there?
Yeah. So the words of new police chief Andy Mills that they're not enforcing the camping ban, while that may be true-ish, they're still enforcing. They still come through downtown and they cite people for sleeping in doorways, for being on the sidewalk. Not every night. You never know when it's going to happen. They'll cite somebody for being on a park bench sleeping. And that has, and they'll give them a 24-hour stay-away order. But they're not, they don't seem to be doing the camping ban. So I think they're true to their word in that regard.
Have you actually had, you've gotten reports of this, or you've seen this happening?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's some evidence on that. Like, for instance, particularly Bonnie in a walker, she's been having a really hard time finding a place to sleep because she gets woken up pretty much everywhere she goes. She should be at the winter shelter. I'm not sure why she doesn't. She has her own reasons for that. So if you come through at 5 in the morning, you'll see this behavior of security guards starting to wake people up between, around 6, usually 6 to 7 a.m. And then at some point, police will come through and begin citing people. So I have a photograph of hundreds and hundreds of you know more than this because you do that Request for Public Records Act sort of stuff. And maybe you should do that, in the near future.
Well, I guess that kind of covers it for me, Brent. Anything you want to say?
Yeah, really quickly, our intern program called Connecting the Dots is actually up and running. 3 interns out there on the street now. We're trying to get at least 10 surveys per intern. Ideally, we'll be working with about 10 interns. That's 100 surveys, 30 questions. We want to develop a data set of what's really happening with people, you know, based on services they're utilizing and needs that they have. Also, the storage program is still called Day and Night Storage. It's now a transportable storage on a box truck. We're still working on that. The budget's kind of getting a little out of hand. I've got to try to find a way, see how we're going to be funding that. We got $15,000 in the bank to make the purchase and to start the program, but to fund it year-round, that'll be a big challenge. We're just kind of winging it without any city support. So that'll be about how much the community values not having to see people cart their belongings around or have city confiscate them or have people have their belongings stolen. Then we get together as a community and agree, no matter what the city's doing at the Boneyard in terms of storage for those 30 or 40 or 50 people, the rest of the hundreds out here need storage also. Additionally, warming center, we need donations. We have a donation barrel at Staff of Life and at Cruise IO downtown, please. All used, new or used, clean bedding, blankets, not sheets, coats, clothing. Warmingcenterprogram.com for information about donations, monetary donations. You can get us at warmingcenter@gmail.com. And, of course, the hotline, 234-9848. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Brent. Take care, man.
Power and health to you, Robert.
All right, man. Bye-bye.
Yep.